From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what's going on, good people? Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. What a show do we have in store for you all today. In just a moment, we'll be chatting with Detroit Free Press Pistons writer. Yes, beat writer for the Detroit Free Press for the Pistons, Vince Ellis. Yes, he'll have everything Pistons, and we'll talk a little NBA Finals with him as well. Also, the NCAA has reached a $20 million settlement in the Keller video game case. We'll talk about that. Also, it's Tuesday, so you know that means Top 5 Tuesday, ladies and gents. And today we're going to list the top 5 villains in Michigan sports history, talk a little Tigers, and also NHL playoffs, all of that, and so much more. But before we get to all of that, here are your current sports quick hit headliners.
I'm Alex Sharg, and it's time for your current sports quick hit headliners on this Tuesday, June 10th. The Michigan State men's basketball team will open the 2014-15 season at the Naval Academy on Friday, November 14th. The Spartans will participate in the inaugural Veterans Classic at the Naval Academy, which will feature a doubleheader and an annual showcase in celebration of Veterans Day. MSU and Navy will play the second game, and the first game will be between Tennessee and VCU. CBS Sports Network will bring all the coverage live from Alumni Hall in Annapolis, Maryland. Quinton Gooden expects a weekend of firsts will lead to one big scholarship offer. The point guard, hailing from Campbellsville, Kentucky, participated in Michigan's college practice camp on Saturday after spending Friday on campus for a visit. The 2 days marked the Taylor County High School product's first trip to Ann Arbor, and he's also ranked the number 54 overall prospect in the 2016 class. He was one of four highly regarded point guards at Saturday's camp. DeWitt quarterback Jacob Johnson has committed to Central Michigan, becoming yet another mid-Michigan quarterback to choose the Chippewas. Johnson, who made his pledge Sunday, became the 10th commitment of the CMU recruiting class in 2015. He'll join former Lansing Catholic quarterback Cooper Rush on the roster. Former Ithaca quarterback Alex Niznak was also with the program, but has since transferred to Southeast Missouri State. Johnson also becomes the second quarterback on the DeWitt roster committed to play college football. The Detroit Tigers had three errors, and also Jose Abreu from the White Sox had a big home run to doom the Tigers in a 6-5 loss against the Chicago White Sox. Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez, and Eugenio Suarez each homered for Detroit, which fell just short in a ninth-inning rally that left pinch runner Rajai Davis on third base. The Tigers will look to even the series tonight with Justin Verlander facing the White Sox's John Danks. The NCAA has reached a settlement in the Sam Keller video game lawsuit just as it prepares to battle Ed O'Bannon in court this week. Keller, a former Arizona State and Nebraska quarterback, led a group that will receive $20 million from the NCAA for use of the college basketball and football games. The Keller suit was scheduled to go on trial in 2015. The LA Kings are one win away from their second Stanley Cup in 3 years after a 3-0 win over the Rangers last night. Jonathan Quick stopped all 32 Rangers shots for the shutout, and the offense scored three times on 15 shots to win Game 3 with significantly less drama than the first two contests. LA will look to clinch the Cup Wednesday night at Madison Square Garden. Last night, it became officially known that Phil Jackson and the New York Knicks have a deal in place to make Derek Fisher their next head coach. The deal is reportedly worth $25 million over 5 years, and this comes after Fisher was mulling his future over following the playoff exit of the Oklahoma City Thunder. The 39-year-old Fisher won 5 titles while playing for Phil Jackson in Los Angeles. A report has surfaced that the Cleveland Cavaliers have offered Kentucky head coach John Calipari $80 million over 10 years to become the team's next head coach and team president. But since then, Calipari has signed a 7-year, $52.5 million contract to continue as the Kentucky Wildcats head coach. And finally, LA Clippers former owner Donald Sterling will still pursue a $1 billion federal lawsuit against the NBA and Commissioner Adam Silver. He will also withdraw his support for sale of the team to Steve Ballmer, negotiated by his wife. He said, quote, "I have decided that I must fight to protect my rights. While my position may not be popular, I believe that my rights to privacy and the preservation of my rights to due process should not be trampled." Those are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Tuesday, June 10th. Time to send it back to Al to start the show. The lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex, for your current sports quick hit headliners. If you just heard from them, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Our phone lines are now open. We'll be taking your calls throughout this entire hour. As you just heard, there is a ton to talk about, ladies and gents. How about that Derek Fisher contract? Can you believe that? You know, Derek Fisher now becomes... this is really a game-changer hiring for me when I look at when he was hired, because he now becomes automatically as one of the top five guys, the top highest-paid guys in the NBA, automatically, and he has no coaching experience whatsoever. He was actually just in a NBA playoff series with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he automatically becomes one of the highest-paid coaches in the NBA. Interesting stuff, ladies and gents. We're going to be talking about that Derek Fisher hiring in just a moment. And I'm asking you guys, you know, because there's such an interesting dynamic when you talk about how much coaches are paid in a plethora of North American sports. When you talk about the NFL to the NBA to the NHL, and I could go and so on and so forth, particularly in the NBA, because, I mean, if you look at just some of these salaries that a lot of the high profile coaches in the league are getting paid, I mean, it doesn't compare to anything that the, you know, in some cases, the worst player on the bench is getting paid. I mean, sometimes the worst guy on the bench is getting paid more than the coach. I just don't get it, folks. And, you know, look at Derek Fisher's contract. Again, automatically becoming one of the top five highest paid coaches in the NBA, and the man has no coaching experience whatsoever. That's a conversation definitely to be had. And why not have it right here on Current Sports? Again, we're opening up our phone lines, 517-355-9527. When you look at the list, and I'll give the full list during our second segment of the show, but looking at the list, you know, we talked about Steve Kerr, a guy who I think has a great basketball mind. A lot of people forget that Steve Kerr was actually a member of the Phoenix Suns, as, you know, in the upper higher ranks with them for quite some time. And, you know, so he has... a pretty good experience when it comes to overall managing a team. But as far as head coaching experience, he has none. But he automatically, with his new contract, he automatically cracked the top five as well. So you got two guys who have no head coaching experience in the NBA automatically becoming one of the top five highest paid coaches in the league. Interesting stuff. We're going to chat about that a little bit. And also, as Alex just ran down, of course, the NCAA $20 million settlement when it comes to video game claims. Now, this in no way, shape, or form is affiliated with the O'Bannon trial. This was a separate trial that was settled out of court for $20 million. They'd have to deal with Sam Keller. Again, it was a Sam Keller video game lawsuit. Now, it's projected that with this lawsuit, you know, in this settlement, excuse me, with the whole $20 million settlement, that around $400 to around $2,000 is expected. It's a huge range, but that's the range of moolah, if you will, that these players would receive. That's the kind of check they will receive now that this whole thing is being settled. And it's interesting because, you know, even though this has no affiliation with the Ed O'Bannon case, it's a separate trial altogether, but there is an interesting connection, because now this dynamic allows, you know, EA to not share any information or withhold. They can withhold information now because the settlement in that case is settled out of court. That information can be withheld now, and they can choose what they want to share and what not to share in that case. So there is an interesting, I guess, mesh of conversation when you talk about that. So we'll talk about that and so much more. And also later on in the hour, we're going to list, a Top 5 Tuesday. We have a lot of fun with that each and every week. And Top 5 Tuesday today is an interesting one because we talked about LeBron James and Cramp Gate throughout the past few days here on the show. And it's very interesting because Matt and I came on the show yesterday and talked about how LeBron, no matter what he does, I mean, no matter how many wins LeBron racks up, how many rings he finishes with in his career, there is always going to be LeBron haters out there just waiting on that one moment, that one opportunity where they can intervene and say, hey, LeBron, you screwed up here. And it's really interesting because, again, it all really stems from me back to the whole decision where he had the whole press conference on where he would go and take his talents to. And, of course, he ended up taking his talents to Miami Heat. It rubbed a lot of people wrong, including myself, but that's been years and years and years ago. LeBron has since come out and said he regrets it. He's moved on with his life and went on to have an illustrious NBA career and is still not done with. And, you know, it's just really, a lot of people look at him as really a villain. And on today's show, we're going to list kind of a local feel on today's show, the top five villains in Michigan sports history, folks. I'm interested to get your list. Again, that's the top five villains in Michigan sports history. If you want to call in and weigh in on that, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. All right, before we get to our guest for today's show, also remind you all that Current Sports TV tapes tomorrow night. Yes, each and every Wednesday night, we have a great time taping Current Sports TV, and we invite all of you to be a part of the live studio audience. It is going to be my pleasure to sit down with a man who many regard as the greatest MSU Spartan hardwood leader to ever grace this program, Mateen Cleaves. Yes, Mateen Cleaves will join me tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Again, if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. Should be a great time. Of course, Mateen now is with Fox Sports Detroit as an analyst for the Detroit Pistons and is also doing some great work with Sirius XM Radio as an NBA analyst overall. So it should be a great time. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. And speaking of Pistons, it's his first time here on the show, covering everything Detroit Pistons. He is the Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. It's my pleasure to welcome Vince Ellis to the show. How you doing, Vince?
How's it going, man? Glad to be on.
Yes, definitely. We're glad to have you on, man. We're definitely a big fan of your work. You're doing a great job over there with the Freep. Now, you know, just to kind of dive
into... literally blush over here.
Just saying, Vince. And you know me being... Everybody knows here on the show, I'm a huge Pistons fan, so I read all your work, man. And I want to dive right into this, okay? Let's talk about... Let's kind of go back in time really quick and talk about the firing of Mo Cheeks. I want to go back in time and kind of work our way up to the current state of Detroit Pistons basketball right now. But the firing of Mo Cheeks in the middle of last season, did it come as a surprise to you?
When it happened, not necessarily. I had an indication probably about 2 weeks before it was actually happened that his job could potentially be in jeopardy by the All-Star break. In retrospect, you know, I don't think necessarily that Mo Cheeks got a fair stake. 50 games in, you know, I mean, that's nothing, you know, with a pretty difficult roster to manage. Josh Smith, you know, not the traditional small forward. So it was a roster that needed work. I think he deserved more time. But I will say this. No one can say that he was doing a good job. I do think the roster was underachieving. He was playing the big three together too much. He could have staggered their minutes if he didn't have the balls or guts to put one of them on the bench in retrospect. So, but again, I don't think he got enough time, but I cannot say he was doing a good job either, though.
Gotcha. And you talk about, you know, playing the big three too much and Josh Smith, Greg Monroe, and Andre Drummond. And what other areas was he really struggling? Was he struggling from a leadership standpoint in that locker room and commanding that locker room at all?
Well, they were inconsistent. You know, they would get up for these games. They played well at Miami, and then they would lose home games to the New Orleans Hornets, Hornets and stuff. They would give up these fourth quarter leads. They'd be up huge, and then they would cough up these leads and stuff. And you could tell the team was not confident going down the stretch. A lot of that's on the coach and stuff when the coach is designing plays. If the team is confident they're getting being led well from the bench, you know, there's a confidence. That confidence kind of permeates the roster. And you could tell it was always like here we go again thing. Whenever a team would, they'd be up by a big margin, like by 16 or 18 points, and they get a quick 8-0 or 10-0 run to put on them. So, again, like I said, he was not doing a good job. I think he got a raw deal, and from the fact he didn't get enough time, or he didn't have enough time. But that being said, I cannot say he was doing a good job, though.
Yeah, the proof is
if he was doing a good job, he wouldn't have got fired. So
exactly, yeah, and you know, it's one of those things I always say, man. The proof is definitely in the pudding, and the pudding was definitely not tasting good, man. Now, Vince, for you. You know, you talk about the big three. I want to kind of harp on the big three because it's something I always rant about here on the show that I don't think, me personally, Vince, I don't think that the Pistons will ever be able to get Josh Smith, Greg Monroe, and Andre Drummond to play together cohesively. Dude, what do you think about that? And is there an odd man out? And if so, who is that?
Well, I think it works fine.
You
if
do?
You put somebody on the bench. Yes.
Right.
Because
right.
Then you have the best, one of the best three-man, big-man rotations in the Eastern Conference. Not too many teams can match that level of athleticism, skill, both these passionate guys who can do things. They cannot play together. But if you look at it as a roster, it's like you have two guys, another guy come off the bench, I think it works fine there. Or even if they do start, they cannot play together no more than like 3 or 4 minutes to start a game together. And if it's that point, you might as well just put a guy off the bench. And I would say right now the guy who has probably best suited to come off the bench is Josh Smith. When you look at his multitude of skills, he's a guy that probably be on the floor anyway, crunch time anyway, guarding for defensive purposes. So, you know, I think if you look at it that way, it does work. But obviously, I do not think it works. Obviously, with Josh Smith playing small forward and you're playing him a whole lot of minutes, you're going to get the same results you got last year. I don't care who the coach is.
You know, Vince, there was a bit of chatter also last year about Greg Monroe possibly being traded. And, you know, I heard trade talks left and right when it came to Greg Monroe.
You weren't reading me. You weren't reading me, obviously. I told you Greg Monroe would never.
Yeah, those were more so forms, Vince.
Greg Monroe wasn't going anywhere. And what is it? Greg Monroe is still here. That's what I wrote that.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not going to pat myself on the back on that. But my vote, he wasn't going anywhere. The Detroit News wrote he wasn't going to go anywhere. But, you know, national folks and, you know, some bloggers stuff, they want to get all this trade stuff going.
Yeah.
That he's going to be traded. He never was going to be traded last year. Never. Never
right.
was going to be traded.
Right. You know, it even got to the point where I was reading a few things that, you know, even, you know, some journals would ask him about it, you know, during the season. It really kind of made him, it seemed to make him uncomfortable, as well it should, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy stuff,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, and again, like I said, now we're in off season now. He's a restricted free agent, you know. And this speculation, he might not be back next year. And I will say this: I was pretty certain he wasn't going to be traded during the season. I'm not as certain that he'll be back be on the roster next year. But if you would ask me what I think is going to happen, I think eventually the Pistons are going to match or extend Greg Monroe, however it winds up working out. Look at it this way: Let's say you have a number in your head. Let's say you think, okay, Greg Monroe's worth $11 million. Okay, that's what you decide he's worth.
Right.
Let's say a team comes in and says, okay, you know what, Greg, we're going to give you a four-year deal at $15 million a year. Now, would you really let someone that you really think's pretty good leave just because of $2 million difference in what you think he's worth? Probably not.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And let him leave for nothing? No. So more chances than more time than not. More time than I see Greg Monroe coming back next year.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with Detroit Free Press beat writer for the Detroit Pistons, Vince Ellis. All right, Vince. Well, Stan Van Gundy. I'm excited about this hire. How big of a catch was Stan Van Gundy? And, you know, did you anticipate him making that move? Because it was a big shock to me when I found out that Stan Van had signed with the Pistons.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what your question was. I missed your question.
Oh, just how big of a catch was Stan Van?
From a coaching aspect, they got one of the best coaches out there. You know, a guy who's made the playoffs every year. He's been the head coach, 65% winning percentage. The NBA Finals run in 2009 with the Orlando Magic. Basically, he had people like Ray Ferguson pick and rolling people to death, playing the floor with Hayley Turkoglu,
yeah,
and Rashad Lewis running, dropping down threes and stuff. He was kind of doing what everybody else is doing right now and then. So from there, one of the smartest guys in the league, knows what he's doing. In between the lines, he's one of the guys as two peers. But obviously the question mark is, does he have the not necessarily the intelligence, maybe the patience to be a front office type. And so we go now, so he has both hats. But from all accounts, he hired a guy, Jeff Bauer, who knows how to run a front office. Another smart guy. So someone told me yesterday that the Pistons have two of the smartest guys in the league working for them. But you know what? It all sounds good now. So we'll see how it works out and stuff. But actually, we see stuff happening when we see them start making moves, and we actually see what happens when they're on the floor next year. But that being said, right now, the Pistons, they got a pretty smart brain trust.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, Vince, I mean, how important was it for Stan to really hold that dual role of both president of basketball operations as well as head coach? Was that really the selling point in this whole deal?
Oh, of course. You know, he tried to downplay it, but if the ownership had decided, look, we just want you to be our coach, I don't think he's here with the Pistons nowadays. So I think it's a huge deal. As you can see, with some of the stuff going on now with, you know, that thing where Cleveland apparently offered John Calipari that same kind of deal in Cleveland. You see, with Minnesota Timberwolves just gave that kind of deal to Flip Saunders. It's some of the kind of stuff we're going to start seeing. And a lot of it is comes from the fact that it seems like it's growing, this tension between front office and the coaching staff.
Yeah, yeah.
So coaching staff calling and saying, well, if we had better players, we'd be better. And the front office going, well, you know what, if you guys coached them better, we'd be better. And, you know, and ownership is being sick of all this tension because they really don't know who to please. You know what, let's just give it to one guy. You know, we have this one guy we can blame when it all goes wrong. So,
right.
but that's what they're doing. So they're sick of trying to figure out who in the middle of these refs are shouting matches between two areas that sometimes have different agendas. So it's one way to get everybody on the same page. And, you know, that was kind of the theme of the press conference when the Pistons introduced Stan Van Gundy. They were looking for unity. They were looking for a seamlessness among both departments. And, you know, that's one of the things, obviously, that people are aware of that follow the Pistons. Sometimes the coaching staff and the front office haven't necessarily always been on the same page.
And, Vince, you talk about that turmoil in many regards throughout the league. When you talk about the front office and the coaching staff, Jeff Bauer, you know, you talked about Jeff being hired, bringing a lot of experience, a great basketball mind, but he also has a very, very close relationship with Stan Van. Was that sort of the selling point for his hiring?
Oh, definitely. You can see in Van Gundy's initial hires, he's hired people that he's worked with before or has a level of comfort with. Every assistant coach he's hired so far have been people that he's worked with in Orlando. Jeff Bauer is a guy he's known for over close to 30 years. They have similar backgrounds from where they got started. So there's a natural comfort level there that obviously evidently Stan Van Gundy is looking to have as he's throwing out his as he's making hires. I'm curious to see if he ever, when he decides to go outside his comfort zone and starts hiring people that may not be familiar with, but, you know, sometimes to be more effective, you need to have at least 15 voices in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how it all plays out. It's still early, so we will notice that stuff as he makes more and more hires.
Vince Ellis, Detroit Free Press beat writer for the Detroit Pistons. All right, Vince. Well, I want to talk about the draft a little bit here because I almost threw my TV out the window when I watched the lottery. Because Detroit's first round pick was top 8 projected as part of the trade that sent Ben Gordon to Charlotte 2 years ago in exchange for Corey Maggette. Now, the Pistons landed the 9th pick in the first round, meaning they forfeited it to Charlotte. Detroit's only pick in this year's draft will be 8th in the second round, 38th overall. How deflating do you think it was for Stan and this organization watching that entire draft and seeing the Pistons get bumped out of the first round? Because Stan, he seemed to really downplay it, but you got to feel him at the end of the day. I mean, in the back of his mind, I mean, he had to be pretty disappointed about it, huh, Vince?
Truly take him at his word on that one. I think the fan base is deflated, and I think you got everybody, the fans wanted a new hotshot prospect, but organizations can't sit around there and be worried and like be sitting there crying in their beer because of something that they have no control over. So I took him at his word that he's, and once it happened, he can't be thinking about that anymore. He wouldn't be the guy for the job if he let that deflate him where he think, oh my God, what's going to happen next? He should have been hired if that's his thought process. So I took him at his word on that one.
Gotcha.
All that deflated about it. Yeah.
Now, is there chatter coming
The fans could be depressed when off the ledge, but you guys aren't running the team. So
right. That is very, very true. And you know what? Looking at this whole draft, and now even though it's a second-round pick, this draft class is expected to be, you know, one of the best we've seen in years. Is there any chatter coming from the organization as to who they might draft, what kind of player the Pistons might draft in the second round?
You can just look at the roster and guess what they may go. They need shooting, so you can guess they probably might go to find somebody who can shoot the ball. But, you know, asking them who they're going to take in the 30th pick of the draft, I mean, it's like needle in a haystack. I see you look at mock drafts, there can be any number of people in play for that pick. It's easier to narrow down who a team might select with the 8th pick in the draft. But 30th pick in the draft, good luck with that one. Trying to figure out who they're going to pick on that one. So.
that's pretty wide open. That's pretty late in the draft, and who knows who they might choose. But, yeah, they do need to shoot. I could definitely see that.
It's an important pick because, as you know, you can find value there. Lance Stevenson, who's about to get paid a lot of money this offseason, he's a second-round pick. So he's a guy that you just think of as off the top of your head. Manu Ginobili was picked in the second round. So a lot of good players come in the second round. But, you know, again, obviously you prefer to have a first-round pick. But, again, and I try to tell people that the impact of that pick is not necessarily next year because typically, the number 8 pick in the draft doesn't come here and act like Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. Usually, it's a guy who can help you a little bit, or typically superstars. Even if it is a superstar, superstars aren't superstars on day one when they're rookies. So that being said, it doesn't the short-term benefit of a first-round pick will probably be limited. It's probably impacting the floor next year. The problem comes 2 or 3 years from now when you need a young new piece. And you know what I'm saying? So that's where long-term it really hurts. So,
yeah, without a doubt. All right, Vince, before I let you go, I want to talk about really quickly two aspects in the league right now. Really quickly on Derek Fisher's hiring. I want to get your thoughts on this because, as I said at the beginning of the show, I mean, Derek Fisher now becomes, he cracks the top 5 highest paid coaches in the NBA list. And the man has no head coaching experience whatsoever. Steve Kerr is also in that mix, another man who has never coached a team. Is this really a game changer when it comes to coaching and looking at the amount that, you know, two guys who have never coached a team before have gotten paid? What do you think about it?
Well, it just shows you. I would say this. I think those are two situations that might not necessarily indicate a trend. Steve Kerr was lucky enough to have a bidding war going on where he had Golden State and New York interested in him. Mm-hmm. So that drove his price up. And then, so when Derek Fisher comes to the Knicks, of course he's going to say, look, you're giving me what Steve Kerr got. Okay, so those are two unique situations. So that might not necessarily mean that we're entering the stage where coaches are about to get some huge paydays. But obviously, it pays to be Derek Fisher and Steve Kerr. They came along at the right time. And the other thing I would say also, Derek Fisher going to the New York market. Of course, that all the stuff that a coach has to deal with the New York market, that's going to come with a nice price tag. But I don't know if necessarily this is a trend that we're going to see coaches start getting these bigger astronomical paydays.
Gotcha, definitely. All right. All right, really quickly, NBA Finals prediction. Vince, it's right now 1-1. Game 3 is tonight in Miami. Who do you got winning this series and why?
I picked the Spurs before the playoffs started, but now after the nonsense of Game 1, where people basically were saying LeBron stopped because he got cramps and were acting like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant could have been dead on the floor and somehow risen from the grave and somehow played, which was the most nonsensical, idiotic thing I've ever seen in my life. Based on that, I think Karma has completely switched to the Miami Heat, and I think LeBron James is going to strangle the Spurs for the rest of the series. Basically, catch it out the social media nonsense he had to deal with, and just catch it out on the Spurs over the next 3 or 4 games. So,
gotcha. So you're thinking that you think the Heat now? You think everything is switched now? And you're going with the Heat in how many games?
I think they're going to do it in 6.
In 6. Heat in 6. All right. Well, you heard it from the man himself, Detroit Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, Vince Ellis. Hey, Vince, thanks so much for joining me today. We got to have you on soon again.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. All right, ladies and gents. Well, let's hit the first break. When we come back, we will talk about, again, we'll kind of dive into that Fisher contract once again, talk about the NCAA $20 million settlement, and Top 5 Tuesday is right around the corner. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, reminding you all that you can be a part of tomorrow night's Current Sports TV taping as I sit down with former Michigan State point guard and now NBA analyst, Mateen Cleaves. Yes, be a part of that live studio audience tomorrow night at 6 p.m. by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. We tape on the campus of Michigan State University inside of the Communication Arts and Sciences building. That's where our TV studios are located in Studio F. Exciting stuff there. All right, well, I'm now joined by Matt Luttke and Alex Shark. How you guys doing? How you doing, Matt? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. Ready to dive into the top five, talk about Derek Fisher, and of course, the video game settlement.
Yeah. Pretty interesting stuff here. A lot is going on. I tell you, it seems as though every single day, this past month or two, every single day has been an intriguing, interesting topic. I'm personally glad that we're done talking about Donald Sterling, even though he pops up in
even
our
though,
headlines
yeah,
all the time.
He's not dead yet.
No.
We're not out of the water
we
yet.
We are
far from
being done with Donald Sterling.
He always pops up in the headlines. Even I wake up every morning and putting together the headliners like, okay, this will be the day where Donald Sterling does not make my headliners. Next thing you know, he pops up, and he's not going out without a fight, but I tell you. All right. Well, guys, as you just heard, we just talked to Vince Ellis, who is the beat writer for the Detroit Pistons for the Detroit Free Press, and he gave some interesting takes not only on the Pistons but also on the overall scheme of things in the NBA, specifically when talking about Derek Fisher, as he has been hired as the newest head coach for the New York Knicks. Now, Matt, as I just mentioned, this is really, for me, kind of it's really interesting because now, you have two guys who have never coached in the league have now cracked the top five highest paid coaches in the NBA list. Now, I told you I would give you guys the full list. Here it is. Number one is Doc Rivers at $7 million. Number two, get this, Stan Van Gundy for the Detroit Pistons at $7 million as well. Greg Popovich at $6 million. Number four is Steve Kerr, again, a guy who has never coached before, at $4 million, and Derek Fisher now at $5 million. Interesting stuff, because when you look at those guys, and, you know, I talk about two guys, and Steve Kerr and Derek Fisher, two individuals who have never held a head coaching position in the NBA, looking at who makes less than them, just to kind of put things in perspective here. You got Scott Brooks of the Oklahoma City Thunder, Tom Thibodeau of the Chicago Bulls, Rick Carlisle, a fantastic coach, and Frank Vogel of the Indiana Pacers. I mean, I could go on and on and on. There's so many coaches who make less. And now you have two guys, again, who have never held a head coaching job in the NBA, making more than about 80% of the league. Matt, what do you think about that?
Well, I think the important thing, and Vince kind of alluded to it, is that New York was involved in both of these searches. Mm-hmm. And New York was going to pay top dollar to find a coach. And they didn't care how much they had to spend. I mean, we just saw the Clippers almost get sold, I guess now. I have to qualify that. Almost get sold for $2 billion.
Right.
The Knicks are worth way more than that. They're going to find the right guy. I mean, they spent a lot of money to hire Phil Jackson to kind of run the show. They want to get their guy. They're going to spend as much as they need to do it. They tried to go after Steve Kerr. He went to a seemingly much better situation in Golden State. Mm-hmm. So they settle on Derek Fisher.
Right.
For 5 years, $25 million or whatever it is.
Right.
They have to pay him not only to come coach the team, but to retire and leave a situation where he has at least an outside shot at a championship every
right.
year.
Right.
I mean, he's playing with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City, or he was playing. So he had a shot to win another title and go out as a champion. So you're kind of luring him away. So maybe there's a little bit extra thrown on top to kind of sweeten the deal mm-hmm. and get him to come to New York. Plus, you're in the biggest market in the country.
And Vince talked about how ruckus and how cutthroat New York fans are. It comes with
it's
a price
crazy.
Tag.
It yeah. does. It does. But if he succeeds,
right.
he is a legend for the rest of his life. He's not going to have to pick up any bar tabs in New York for the rest of his days if he succeeds as coach of the Knicks.
Exactly.
So I think it's a fair deal. I get that he has no experience and, you know, that should factor into how much he gets paid. But he did win five titles with Phil Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to basically, I feel like, just be a parrot of Phil.
He is.
I mean, Phil wanted a guy who was going to toe the company line. What better than the, you know, not a star player, your role-playing point guard
right.
who led you to five titles.
Exactly. You know, it is so funny when this update came through. It's funny how ESPN presented it because I went to ESPN.com immediately when the news broke, and I went online, and it kind of phrased it in the article as Fisher, new coach of the New York Knicks, Phil Jackson will be allowed to come in practices and kind of, you know, just sort of alluding to the fact that Phil Jackson is certainly going to be a part of coaching this team in one way or another, which is a big reason of why, you know, Phil tried to go after Kerr, being a former player of his, And now, of course, Derek Fisher, another one of those players who, you know, Phil coached Derek Fisher to a few championships in L.A. So, I mean, Phil wanted a guy who he could bring in, who had a, he had a personable relationship with, and who he could kind of mentor in the coaching realm and sort of be the coach behind the guy, if you will. And sort of kind of like Pat Riley. I feel like Pat Riley's like that, too. That's another story that's yet to be written, I think, where I think Pat Riley, even though, you know, we see him in the stands all the time, and he's the guy sort of managing everything, and you see Eric Spoelstra out there coaching. But you better believe that Pat Riley comes down from that booth and definitely has some conversations with Eric on what to do and what not to do, without a doubt.
And he was Eric's biggest mentor coming through the coaching ranks. I mean, I guess the difference here is that we saw Derek Fisher on the court, whereas Eric Spoelstra was behind the scenes kind of working his way up the coaching ladder. But it's a similar scenario where it's, you know, the mentor hires his protege, or one of the protégés in Phil Jackson's case, and promotes him to a head coaching spot. And they work together in the front office. So it'll be interesting to see how the dynamic works. But like you said, I mean, Phil Jackson's pulling the strings there.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about it.
And, you know, the golden question for me, is, you know, the question that I hear left and right, you know, when this story broke is it fair? Is it fair? To be honest with you, no. It's not fair that a guy who has no head coaching experience comes in the league and is paid more than about 80% of the league. No, it's not fair at all that he's getting paid more than those guys. But at the same time, life isn't fair. This is a great lesson of life. Life isn't fair sometimes. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. And, you know, even guys, you know, to compare to a guy in New York, even guys with similarly inexperienced backgrounds who doesn't measure up to that contract, a guy being Jason Kidd, the Knicks right now are paying, you know, Fisher nearly twice as much per year as the Knicks, the Nets, are paying Jason Kidd, who is coming off just 1 year, right, kind of in the same situation as Derek Fisher, right, coming right off the hardwood into a head coaching role, and Fisher is getting paid nearly twice as much as Kidd was getting paid last year up until now. I mean, that's that just to put things more in perspective, that really is alarming to me as well. Alex, what were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, along with just the way it's working, how better is it to have your former point guard, the guy that led you to five championships? I totally agree with you guys that it may be somewhat of a parrot for Phil Jackson, and look at the Pistons when they got Jeff Bauer. It's the guy that Stan Van Gundy trusted. So in this situation, it's very similar. It's a guy that Phil Jackson trusted. But I want to talk a little bit about what Al brought up in whether it was not whether it's fair, but were other coaches given a fair chance is what I want to talk about. Because as much as the fairness aspect and that he has a favoritism towards his other players, we saw the fine earlier last week what happened. We saw what happened because there were some talks before Derek Fisher even decided that he was going to go to retire. So what I'm wondering is, do you guys think that other coaches were even given a fair chance? Or do you think that Phil Jackson had his mind made up?
Oh, I think it's without question. Phil Jackson had his mind made up that he wanted a former player of his to come in so that he could sort of have some control on the hardwood when it comes to the coaching job. And that was evident when he went after Steve Kerr. I think when we saw what happened with Steve Kerr, when Steve obviously didn't decide to go and coach the Knicks, he decided to go into Golden State and coach over there. But we saw even in that pursuit what Phil was looking for. And it was no surprise that Derek Fisher's name came up. It kind of was a surprise that it came up during a playoff series, in the middle of a playoff series. But it was no surprise his name came up, and it was no surprise that he was going after a former player of his that he could bring in and sort of, you know, kind of let you use the word you use, Alex, to kind of be a parrot, if you will, you know, to kind of pull the strings, be a puppet, if you will, because now he has that control. But for me, it wasn't a surprise, not at all. I knew Phil's a guy who knows what he wants, and he goes after it. He's shown that throughout his entire coaching career.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to do things his way or the highway. And he has 11 rings to prove that his way is the right way to do it. You know, you saw way back when Los Angeles, the Lakers, were looking for a coach. He wanted total control, and Jimmy Buss didn't want to give it to him, so he decided, well, I'm going to go to the Knicks instead. And he passed on the Laker job, moved on, or didn't even get offered, because when you have those personalities clashing, it's not going to work out. He wanted somebody who could, you know, kind of cede control to Phil, and he got him. He wanted one of his guys. He got him. He was going to do it whatever it took. He's going to take fines, take flack for making headlines while Derek Fisher is technically still playing. I don't know why Derek Fisher was seeing time on the court. That's a question for Scott Brooks. Maybe that's why he didn't crack the top five.
Maybe that's why he's in the bottom list.
The highest paid coaches. But he got his guy. We're moving forward.
Right.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see Derek Fisher as the Knicks head coach.
Really quickly, guys, I'm interested to get both of your guys' takes on this question right here. Because now with this happening, you have Derek Fisher, a guy who, again, has no head coaching experience. He comes in immediately and cracks the top echelon of highest paid coaches in the NBA. I want to ask you guys about the coaching dynamic now in other sports. When a sport such as, just not to pick on any sport, I'm going to do it, the NFL. The NFL is historically known as an institution, an organization, when looking at just the coaching realm, that you sort of have to earn your stripes. You sort of have to work your way up. You see so many guys before they become head coaches, work their way up from an assistant coach, maybe a lineman coach, running backs coach. They work their way up in the ranks before they even think about becoming a head coach in the National Football League. Now, the National Football League, obviously, is the most powerful North American sporting organization that there is. And you see an organization like the NBA, who's not in that realm of, is not on the same level as the NFL in that regard, paying coaches who have no prior experience, that amount of money, cracking the top five list. In the NFL, you don't have the dynamic. Do you think that the NFL would start to possibly take some risk, see some teams take some risk, and possibly hire a guy with limited experience in that realm in an organization like the NFL? Because now I think it does open the door for that conversation.
I mean, it's almost kind of starting to happen already. And while it's not exactly an apples-to-apples comparison, I mean, you look at guys like Chip Kelly coming up from Oregon, jumping from the college game to the pro game, had success his first year. You look at a guy like Mark Trestman, who coached in the CFL before going to the Bears. He had a pretty good first year. So you're seeing guys look in other directions. And while those guys did have coaching experience some level, they weren't NFL head coaches. They weren't NFL coordinators. They were in different, levels of the game. I think with basketball, frankly, I'm happy to see this happen. I'm happy to see guys get shots who maybe don't have the coaching acumen, but who clearly have the experience in the game and know the game inside and out. I mean, Jason Kidd, he was one of the best point guards ever. He knows the game. And while it's a different aspect from doing it from the sidelines rather than on the court, I mean, gosh, how many times did you hear he's a coach on the floor? He's a coach on the floor.
You heard that with Derek Fisher.
Fisher, too, exactly. These two guys were, quote-unquote, coaches on the floor. I would rather see a guy get a shot fresh off of playing than have the same coach who's failed at multiple stops get another shot with another team. I mean, if Mike Brown gets hired by anyone, it's going to be a mystery to me.
It is. I agree.
I mean, how many times did the Cavs have to hire and fire this guy before the league realizes that he's just not cut out to be a head coach? So I would rather see guys get a shot, get their first shot coming out of their playing days, rather than having coaches get recycled over and over and over again and just not work out.
You know what, Matt? I think in the NFL, though, I still think we're a long way away from seeing a guy, because like you said, you brought up those few names who they did have coaching experience in some way, shape, or form. Guys like Derek Fisher and Steve Kerr, they've had no coaching background. I think we're a long way from seeing it in the NFL, just simply because I think the NFL is such... there's so much to it in the NFL, because football to me is such a dynamic sport, because you have all these areas ranging from the defensive line to the corners to the right receivers to the quarterbacks to the running backs. In the NBA, not to diminish the job of coaching in the NBA, but it's not as complex, if you will, as an NFL coaching gig. And that's why I feel as though in the NFL, they want to see some credentials, because you just can't, I don't think you are going to be successful, a guy who has no coaching experience in football in general, to come in and just be a head coach of a team. The NFL is too complex in that regard. You can maybe get away with it in the game of basketball, but the game of football, there's so many different puzzle pieces and aspects to it that make it such a complex sport that make it, ideally for me, impossible for that story to happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you look at it and let's say you were a linebacker for 12 years. I mean, granted, you have some idea of how offense works, but you haven't been there.
You have no idea, right? You have no idea.
I mean, it's,
basketball,
when you only play
both sides.
Exactly. When you only play half the game,
you
kind of deprive yourself of the knowledge of the other half. And sure, guys study film all the time and know what is coming from opposing offenses, but it's another thing. It's one thing to prepare for an offense. It's another thing to prepare your offense. So I think it's a bit apples and oranges there, but, and the other big thing is a lot more blows to the head when you're playing football than when you're playing basketball.
That is true.
You might have a few more marbles left after you retire from basketball than from playing professional football.
That is a very good point too, man. All right, really quick, before we hit the first break, I want to talk about the Keller settlement, the $20 million settlement that is being, you know, given back to former college athletes. Now, Sam Keller, this whole, just to kind of run it down real quick, the Sam Keller video game lawsuit, it kind of compares to the Ed O'Bannon case in that is kind of the same, in the same realm, because Keller is a former Arizona State and Nebraska quarterback, led a group that will receive $20 million from the NCAA for using their likeness in college basketball and football games that featured their you know, kind of just their whole persona in the video game. And that's exactly what the Ed O'Bannon case is pursuing right now. It's interesting because I'm glad that the players are getting something, you know, and now arranges with, you know, when you break down this $20 million settlement and break it down to these former players and athletes who were, you know, looked at in these games, they are going to get anywhere, an average player is going to get from anywhere from $400 to $2,000 each. It's very interesting because this settlement now makes EA less likely to share info in the O'Bannon case. It was a smart move in that regard from EA's perspective. And I was not surprised that they were settled. I was surprised the amount of money, though, because I tried to do some research and see if this money would be enough. And, you know, looking at how much, you know, they made off these games, I couldn't really find a definite figure. But I'm glad they are getting something, because I do believe that if you're using these players' numbers and their heights and weights in these video games, you're ideally using them in the game. They deserve something from it. I'm glad this happened.
I'm on the fence.
You are on the fence.
I mean, I'm fine that they are getting something. But at the same time, I don't like that they're stopping producing these games. And maybe that's just me being selfish because I love to play them. That was like my summer growing up. Every year I'd go out and buy NCAA football and have a blast with it. But I feel like if I were a college athlete, I would absolutely love to have myself in a video game. Mm-hmm. Like I'd be over the moon to be able to play as myself, not have to create myself.
Oh,
I'm already in the game.
Already there, right.
I understand the aspect where you want to get some sort of compensation for it. At the same time, I would just be happy to be included. And the other thing is, I don't know why they have to stop making them. Because every year, what happens is they release the game, it comes out, guys, sure, their height and weight is similar, and you know, they've most of the time they've got the same, you know, skin tone and everything, and they're accurate, but they're just numbers. They're not name, you know, it's not like their names are in there. And then the gaming community updates the rosters on their own.
You still know who these players are.
Hold on. They update the rosters, they put the names in, they make everything accurate.
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, defensive end number 2, you have William Golston. You know, like,
so the user does that.
The user does that themselves. So why wouldn't EA just make a super generic game, have all the rosters be the same, and then just let the users do it themselves? Because that's what they were doing anyway.
Mm-hmm. I can see where you're going. I can see where you're going. But still, though,
it might take gamers a lot more time to do it.
Uh huh.
But these people play video games for, you know, like, but they have time.
Each roster. All right. How much does he weigh?
Seriously. I wouldn't even start a Dynasty until 2 weeks after the game came out so I could download the accurate rosters the names in the game.
But isn't that the same discussion when it comes to the jerseys as well? You know, when you walk through, you know, the student union and you see jerseys being sold.
Right. You see the MSU number 40.
The number
you know
40.
It's Bulla.
Yeah, you know it's him. And there's a lot of discussion on whether or not they should be paid in that regard. So, Alex, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, and there are people that play video games for a living that would, I'm sure, have no problem making names. And one thing I'd like to add to what Matt has said is I have a couple friends that are athletes that are in the game, and talking to them, they were all excited at first. They were excited to get some of theirs and get a settlement and get some money and help them out with college. But then looking back at it, when they found out that they can't, that they're going to stop making the game and they're not going to be able to play as themselves anymore, they were more set about them not being able to play the game than them getting money in a settlement. So I think in hindsight, I don't think they would have went through with the settlement if they realized that the games would stop. But I feel like if there's some solution.
Really? You think so?
I really think so.
That'd be a good poll, because I think There, it depends on the person with me, because I feel as though there are a lot out there that, oh, it's cool
sure,
being
sure.
in the game.
Well, the people I've talked to.
But dollar signs talk, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, but when you're talking $20 million and you're talking about all the athletes out there, it's almost a word of mouth. Well, the more people that are in the lawsuit, the less you're going to get. So then you're going to try to talk to the athlete saying, oh, right. Well, don't worry about jumping on this lawsuit.
Right, and that's what I wanted to see on whether or not, you know, looking at the, you know, looking at how much EA made off the game, if $20 million was just a drop in the bucket, or was that really a validated settlement? And that's what—that's something I have to really dig into. But I think it varies with the person. It's great to be in a video game, let's be honest. I mean, if I was in a video game, I'd probably lose my mind.
Right. You buy like six copies.
Right. But at the same time, the question is, I mean, at what point does that get old? Where you're like, okay, this is cool, but man, I would like to get paid because you're using my image
I guess,
to sell the game.
But how many of those... How many of those commercials for the NCAA do we see that say, I'm going to go pro in something other than sports?
Right.
It's not like you're going to be in video games for the rest of your life. You have a short window that you can appear in a video game.
You guys are really hard on the fact that it is so cool.
It is pretty cool.
It is very cool.
It's cool.
I'm not going to lie. But at the same time, you got to ask the question, when does that get old for a college athlete?
I hear you.
We're going to have Andre on to talk about this, actually.
Yeah, actually going to say, we should ask him.
We're definitely going to have him on. We'll have him on tomorrow to talk about that. All right, well, let's jump to the break. When we come back, it's Tuesday, and we love to have fun with Top 5 Tuesday here on the show. We're going to list the top 5 villains in Michigan sports history. Don't miss that. We'll be right back. All right. It is Top 40 Tuesday, actually. That's why you hear all the top music from around the country that Alex is playing today. Thanks a lot, Alex, for that. Well, it's also Tuesday. That means it's Top 5 Tuesday, and today we have an interesting one for you. The Top 5 Villains in Michigan Sports History. And we decided to bring this one to you because, again, with Cramp Gate, going back to Cramp Gate and looking at how, as Vince Ellis talked about, how there's a lot of idiots out there just harping on the fact that LeBron went out with a cramp and was boohooing that he couldn't come back in the game. It was absolutely ridiculous and really kind of put in perspective on how LeBron is really looked at as one of the biggest villains, if not the biggest villains, in sports today. So we decided to keep it local, though, and list the top 5 villains in Michigan sports history. Let's start this thing off, guys. I have a pretty interesting list here. I want to start with Bill Laimbeer. Bill Laimbeer, a guy, you know, looking at that whole... I'm not sure if many of you saw the Bad Boys documentary that was just aired last month. It was great and really kind of looked at how the Bad Boys were really, they got that name for a reason. And Bill Laimbeer had a lot to do with that. Bill Laimbeer was a guy who would do anything to win. If that meant talking trash, pulling your shorts, giving you a hard foul, he did not care what you thought about him. And he carried himself that way each and every time he hit the hardwood. I loved him. I loved him because I'm a Detroit Pistons sports fan. But if you were the opposition, you hated Bill Laimbeer. I'm going to start the list off with that. I had Bill Laimbeer on my list.
All right. I almost think we should just do our complete list.
You want to do it one by
because
one?
Because mine is vastly different.
Is it? Okay. Interesting. Yeah, yeah. All right.
So you go ahead.
I go Bill
finish
Laimbeer.
Finish out your list.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm going to go Isaiah Thomas next. I got two Pistons on my list. Isaiah Thomas... Looking at the history of Isaiah, I mean, Isaiah, again, going back to that Bad Boys documentary, one of the greatest point guards, one of the greatest players of all time, but did not get the respect he deserved just simply because he was another one of those guys who played with a chip on his shoulder. He was a guy, he was cutthroat. We saw the whole kiss before each game with him and Magic Johnson, but man, when they were on the court, they went at it. We know the relationship he had with Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls didn't like the Pistons. The Pistons didn't like the Bulls. Isaiah Thomas was very adamant in that. A lot of people felt as though the whole walk-off at the end of, you know, when the Bulls finally get over that hurdle and finally beat the Pistons in the playoffs, they felt as though it was Isaiah's, you know, doing. But if you look at the documentary, it really wasn't. Isaiah was just really the guy who kind of looked kind of fishy walking off the court. He had his head down and kind of had a smirk. Yeah. So he was looked at as a villain. He's still looked at as a villain to this day. He's on my list. Ndamukong Suh. He's a guy on the Lions who is one of the most. I feel as though the national perception of Ndamukong Suh is one of the dirtiest players in football. You know, the step on the helmet and the, you know, all the antics that goes along with Suh. He's definitely a guy that's looked at in a very negative regard. Mike Hart in 2007 with the whole little brother comment. I'm adding him on my list because Mike, Before that, I mean, it was kind of a. When Mike, I looked at him as a great player. You know, I was a Spartan fan even back then. I knew I wanted to come here. When Mike made that comment, it just lit a fire in me that said, are you serious, dude? Little brother is a thing it's a comment that's still brought up to this day. And we talk about the whole Michigan State-Michigan rivalry. And last but not least, Tanya Harding in the Nancy Kerrigan case. Because that happened, a lot of people forget, that happened right at Cobo Hall in Detroit, Michigan. Tanya Harding and her involvement in the whole Nancy Kerrigan clubbing, which unknown suspect clubbed Nancy Kerrigan to injure her before the figure ice skating finals. Oh, that was an unbelievable moment. I had to add her to my list. So that's my list right there, man.
That's a really good list, Al.
Solid.
And Mike Hart is an interesting inclusion because at the time, he angered Spartan fans. Mm-hmm. And now, he's probably angering Wolverine fans for making the comments and kind of starting this whole role reversal in terms of the rivalry.
Right.
I like that. Interesting.
Yeah, okay. Interesting, yeah.
So my top five villains list doesn't even deal with the same criteria as yours.
okay.
I chose kind of a snapshot of right now who Michigan sports fans would hate. So not players who play for teams in Michigan.
Okay.
But people and sports figures that, you know, people in the state of Michigan who root for teams in the state of Michigan would despise.
Oh, I mean, okay, I got to hear this.
So starting out, number five, David Ortiz, Big Poppy. Mm-hmm. Now, he's a fine guy. People like him. That's great. Mm-hmm. Grand slam in game two of last year's ALCS.
Yeah,
kind of turned the tide of that series. People say it might have cost the Tigers a chance at another World Series. And then, of course, for good measure, he adds the ninth inning blast on Sunday night to beat the Tigers and end a modest two-game win streak.
Right. I can see that. Okay.
Number four.
Yep.
Urban Meyer. Mm-hmm. Down in Ohio State. He is threatening to beat U of M like a drum for the next decade. You know, continuing where Jim Tressel left off. He's going to challenge MSU and Michigan in the East Division in the Big Ten for the foreseeable future. And when he got hired by Ohio State, he started to steal recruits from both schools. Not a great guy. Going back all the way back to 1996 and 7, Claude Lemieux and Patrick Waugh of the Avalanche. Sure, it was almost 20 years ago, but between the hit on Draper, the Waugh-Vernon fight, the Waugh-Osgood fight, it was as good as a hockey rivalry could get. Number two, Ron Artest.
Ah.
Malice at the Palace, enough said.
Good
huge
one.
Villain in the state of Michigan. And number one, just like politics, I have Matt Millen, Joe Dumars, and Rich Rodriguez because when things aren't going well, you blame the previous administration.
That's true.
That's my pick.
I like that. So Matt had a top eight. I like that, man. I like that. Interesting. All right, Alex. Really quickly.
I actually went with Matt. Very similar villains that other people would hate. The only one I actually had a lot of similar ones. One to add that I think is an important one. How about Reggie Miller, guys? That guy, along with the whole Spike Lee thing with the Knicks. He was poisonous for Pistons fans. And also, one guy that always kills the Detroit Tigers, Paul Konerko, always destroys the Tigers.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good list. I like the twist you guys gave. I like to twist all of us gave in that. All right. If you want to add to it, go to Facebook.com/currentsports and tweet me at AlMartinWKR and give your top five villains in Michigan sports history. Oh, boy. In the NHL playoffs, the Kings. Man, it looks like it's over, guys. It's done. All right. Well, thanks so much to all of you for joining me for today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day. And as always, be easy, people.